Hello and welcome to the Winding Roads Companion Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I am so pleased to have with me in the studio, Tullin Baird. Tullin, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Tullin Baird, a local kid, grew up about 15 miles south of town, along Highway 27. And yeah, went off to college, came back and bought the Liberty Pole store, which is even closer to town. I was looking for a wood shop. Mm-hmm. And that offered a pretty great spot for it, and other things too. So there's a kind of retail space in the front that mm-hmm. I fixed up, and then have my wood shop in the back, and sort of delve into other things too, not just woodworking. I do some metalworking and glass and a lot of repairs and things too. So
very cool.
A lot of wide range of stuff. I get interested in a lot of things and follow tacks and enjoy that a lot. So
yeah, that's awesome. And I also happen to know the Liberty Pole store sells ice cream.
They do,
which
they
is
do,
great. Yeah. Yep. So yeah. That's awesome. Cool. So let's begin by just exploring the idea of when you started thinking about craft or art in your life. Like, when did you become an artist? How did you become an artist? Right. Tell us a little bit about your history.
I wouldn't say that artist is probably the first thing I would describe myself as.
Sure.
But I've been told it applies, so I'm happy to absorb that mantle, yeah. I suppose. It's a hat I'll wear, I'll say.
Yeah.
But I've done, I think, woodworking in various scopes, like making poorly crafted walking sticks for the county fair as a kid. But
it's a great place to start.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's awesome. We had like a sumac thicket by our house.
Yeah.
And every year it was like, you know, 2 days before the fair, it's like, how are we gonna have something for the fair? Oh, I signed up for woodworking. Let's just cut one down with my Swiss Army knife and shave all the bark off and call it a walking stick. Terrible walking stick, but it worked, I guess.
Yeah.
And then we had just, you know, I had projects as a kid. Mm-hmm. We reshingled a shed and there was cedar shakes on the ground.
Yeah.
And I'd make like sailboats out of it and carve the mast to be like a, you know, four-masted ship out of the shingles. But as far as like as a serious hobby or a profession or a semi-profession, mm-hmm. Probably more after college. I did some woodworking during college, but really, in the last probably 8 years or so, really delved into it, watched a lot of YouTube videos, mm-hmm. a lot of like, oh, that's sweet, I gotta try that. And I had my grandpa's old lathe that I got working again and started using, and I was like, this is sweet. Like, this is really cool.
How long did it take you to like restore this lathe? I mean, like, what was the process like?
I think I put a new motor on it and I had to get a chuck.
Okay.
It's not a fancy lathe.
Yeah.
I have a different one that I use most of the time, but mm-hmm. then I have still my grandpa's as a backup, and I still use it sometimes.
That's really cool.
But yeah, that wasn't too tough.
Uh-huh.
A little bit of finagling.
Yeah.
But nothing crazy.
Yeah, very cool. Something that strikes me about the stories that you just told is that it's like you're playing with cedar shakes the way that some kids play with Legos.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, where you have all of these like component parts that are more or less the same shape, size, dimension, and you are putting them together and creating all of this stuff. With this, it's a constructed material, but originally a natural resource rather than, you know, something plastic.
One thing, so I was homeschooled until high school.
Okay.
And a lot of times it was get your schoolwork done in the morning, mm-hmm. and then if your schoolwork is done, you can go out and play.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the playing is making things.
Right.
So, you know, you can call it playing or you can call it shop class. It's basically the same same thing, the
or
same
outcome.
Or you can
call it artistry.
Right, right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was fun. I mean, mm-hmm. fun and productive.
Absolutely.
And, of course, it was a big family, so there was, you know, a lot of kids you can play with and mm-hmm. a lot of bigger projects one person wouldn't think to do or couldn't do that you can just make. And so I'm extraordinarily grateful for that. That mm-hmm. was super.
Yeah. How does that spirit of play make its way into your work now?
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, so like quick example. So I'll get sucked into like a YouTube video and be mm-hmm. like, oh man, I gotta try that. Mm-hmm. So somebody mentioned to me, I guess sometimes it's YouTube video and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just somebody with some some style of work that I'm like, oh, that's pretty sweet.
Right.
I have a friend that has made some guitars, and he's like, you can pipe bend thin Laz. I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
And my brother had picked up a vacuum pump because he still milks dairy cows.
Okay.
And had a piece of copper pipe that was exhaust pipe, and I was like, can I maybe have that? So a propane torch in the end of that thing and soak the Laz. I had some white oak that I ripped down into pieces and bent into shapes, and I made all kinds of stuff. Funny shapes,
cool
Mobius strips, and cool things out of it.
That's incredible.
Yeah, super fun.
Yeah.
I took a just a little glass circle that I'd cut out and made a frame bent around that circle. Yeah. And then I put a mirror finish on the back.
Awesome.
Because they make spray paints that do just about everything.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yep. They have glow-in-the-dark and mirror spray paints and all kinds of stuff.
Gosh.
Another YouTube tangent I went on is spray painting planets.
Uh-huh.
And that's super fun.
I bet.
Just a blast.
Yeah, like a far cry from the whole, like, planet model, you know, the little teeny tiny things, like, stuck in foam that I did
but
when I
was
a kid.
It's like 5 minutes, and you're just going wild with some spray paint and some circle stencils.
Neat.
And I mean, it's great. It's so much fun.
That's really cool. So I think you've talked a little bit about this already, but I would love to know, what drew you to woodworking?
Yeah.
What about the material or the tools gives you that kind of like, oh, I want to keep doing that?
I mean, part of it is it's more accessible tooling-wise. Than other things, like metalworking, you need a lot more investment in tools.
Yeah.
So I'm also interested in metalworking and that type of thing, but it takes a lot more to get into it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So woodworking is far easier. You can still spend a bajillion dollars on woodworking tools if you want to. But
ask
if you,
my dad.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, so you can if you want, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
There are ways to do things with very little input.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with very little input and then got a, you know, nice-ish table saw and, you know, sort of nicer tools along the way, but you don't have to start there.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. Part of it is you start with something that's like very ubiquitous. Like there's trees everywhere around here.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's beauty in there. There's stuff that you can't see.
Yeah.
And then as you work with it, you're like, no, that's going to be cool. And learning to see that is another really cool element that I,
That's really the magic, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. You're like, that piece of wood that's, you know, weathered and junky isn't actually junky.
Yeah.
It's actually really awesome inside.
Yeah.
So that's really fun.
That reminds me of, you know, there's a bit of a, it's probably a cliche for a reason, but this idea of like a sculptor looking at a slab of marble and like taking away the pieces that are not the sculpture, you know what I mean, like seeing the sculpture within that slab.
Right.
I feel like a very similar idea can be applied to like what you've just said of looking at this piece of wood, this tree, you know, whatever, and as you go, probably you're able to sort of say
And then the other part that I think I really enjoy is sort of the material science of it. So like steam bending, like I was mentioning with the hot pipe bending, I've done some steam. My sister has a team of oxen and has made some yokes for them and wrote me in to help make oxbows. And those, you can use a few different woods for the oxbows, but basically you're taking a 2x2 and bending it 180 degrees.
Wow.
Like a hairpin.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of wood to bend.
Yeah.
And we made up with a wagon tongue and a winch, a bending apparatus. And you can take that straight piece of wood and then turn it into a hairpin in like a few hours.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's super cool. And then of course there's things like grain direction and species type. Like you know, some woods are going to be able to bend, some can't. Yeah. You need to bend in the right grain direction, and you need to know, like,
I love that. So in the, you know, the journey of, I want to be able to make this thing with this material.
Yep.
You are venturing into engineering.
Yeah.
Physical material sciences, as well as biology.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, like, I mean, Wood Database online is fantastic. You can find out.
It's literally just called Wood Database.
Literally Wood Database. I think it's wooddatabase.com. It's great.
That's so cool.
But like, I was building a table. It was an 8x4 or 4x8 top with leaves on either end.
Yeah.
Out of ash. And I was like, how much is this tabletop going to move in a year?
Interesting.
So you can look up and you can find out the relative expansion ratios of that wood top. And you can estimate in each board about how much of it is rift sawn, how much of it's flat sawn, and kind of how much that board will move, and calculate how much the tabletop's going to move and build it accordingly.
That is super neat.
Yeah. So that, like, it sounds incredibly nerdy and crazy, but it's it's helpful.
Right.
Like I needed to build brackets with slots so that it wouldn't split the wood, and that top was going to move like 3/16 of an inch or more,
right,
in the course of a year from the center.
Yeah.
So you need, it's 3/8 of an inch over the whole width of the table.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot significant.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of movement. And if you don't build for that, it's not going to be as good of a table. So
absolutely. And that's the sort of thing that allows a piece to like really stand the test of time versus something that looks great kind of initially. And then you realize, oh, this isn't exactly what I wanted. I resonate with that a lot in terms of like my medium is yarn and knitting.
Yep.
Right. And there I have made a lot of really pretty expensive mistakes.
Right.
Using the wrong fiber.
Okay.
You know, for a purpose, right? So alpaca, for instance, is something that's like very heavy.
Okay.
Like by the fiber, and it's also real slippery.
Gotcha.
So like it doesn't bounce back like wool does.
Yep.
So you try to make a big heavy sweater, and it's going to turn into a dress.
Gotcha.
Ask me how I know.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Okay.
And so it's the same thing, you know, like different kinds of fibers have these different qualities.
Right.
And knowing the science, getting nerdy about the fiber itself, or in your case, like the material, the wood.
It's still a fiber.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Well, and like not even to mention that you can like have bamboo, tensile.
Yep.
Like clothing, right? Mm-hmm. You can have stuff that's been manufactured from wood pulp and like cellulose fibers. But yeah, all of those materials have different ways that they react to water, to weight, to other fibers. And knowing that allows you to make the best possible like long-standing piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at some point, it's like, it almost makes it easy. You can be like, well, of course that's going to be, once you know some of those material factors, you're like, of course that's going to make sense. That's going to work.
Yeah. It kind of makes some decisions for you.
Right. It's like, it doesn't seem obvious, but once you know some of the parameters, it's like, well, no, of course that's what I should use.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and like seeing some of your work, because I have briefly been to Liberty Pool Store.
Okay. Yep.
And also just seeing some of the materials and things that you've sent to me for perusal for like social media, it's really clear to me that you have this very cool interplay between precision as well as intuition. Like you've got this cool, I don't know what exactly to call it, but it's not a tension, but it's like, I can see that your work is very precise, but then I can also see like a whimsy to it.
There's definitely a time for winging it.
Yeah.
Like you should leave yourself the freedom to be like, no, I'm just going to cut this long.
Can you tell us about a time that you just winged it? And maybe one that like really worked out or one that was like really cool.
I mean, there's plenty of opportunity. I'm trying to think of a specific example. Yeah.
Or is there like a technique that you're exploring right now that is like new to you but something that you're interested in?
Well, I mean, right in the recent past, I haven't been doing quite so much expansive like work in woodworking, but I've done a little bit more actually. So I'm getting married in about a month.
Oh, congratulations. And,
yeah, thank you. Thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's super exciting.
So you've been busy.
I have been quite busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, super busy. And I built a forge to cast my fiance's ring.
Of course you did.
Right. It was great. It was super fun. And thankfully, she allowed me the leeway to do that, and I was very happy. And then had enough left over that I made my wedding band also out of some gold.
That's incredible.
Yeah, super fun.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've done some work with like copper and more recently gold.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm starting to do some repairs, jewelry repairs for folks.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's also been super fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've been a little less like exploratory in the woodworking realm in the last couple of months, but
yeah,
doing
other things
too.
Cool. Awesome. So how did you begin participating in the Winding Roads Art Tour?
Largely Tom and Kathy Wheeler.
Okay.
So I know Kathy has been in, I think from the very beginning of the tour, quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom is an excellent woodworker in his own right.
Awesome.
And yeah, so he's helped me out a number of times. Actually, the lathe that I currently use, he sold me.
Nice.
And Kathy stopped in, I think, a couple times and was like, "Hey, you know, were you interested in being in the art tour?" And sure, yeah, absolutely, I'd be. Mm-hmm. That'd be great. Help me take pictures for it. And
very cool.
So yeah, super, super grateful for them. They're wonderful folks.
That's awesome. And so is this going to be your first year participating?
No, last year I did.
Last year.
Yep,
okay.
Last year
so
I did
as
well.
This is going to be your second year.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. And maybe you can tell us a little bit, like in the Liberty Pole store.
Yeah.
And that's also where your studio is.
Yeah.
What's your routine like? You know, are you there just kind of like day to day? What are your hours like? What does that look like?
So right now I still work at Johnson's One Stop down in Seneca. That's where I went to high school. Great place. Check it out. It's wonderful. The folks are amazing. I work there a couple days a week, Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
And then Wednesday is just my run around, headless chicken, do errands,
sure.
Figure out what I got to do day.
Yep.
And then Thursday, Friday, and Saturday I'm at the store.
Okay.
And then closed on Sunday.
Okay.
So at least 8 to 4, I'm there. And then Thursdays, I have a game night. Bring your own games, bring some snacks, and play around. Super fun.
That's really
neat. It's
been
a lot of fun. And I also, recently, one of the regulars at game night, who is very much a chess fanatic, he's like, "Tony, can we do like a chess tournament?" And I was like, "Look, I'm getting married," and at this point, it was like 2 months or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't have the bandwidth right now to plan another big event, but if you want to plan it, I'll host it. That's fine. So a couple weeks ago, we did, actually, it would have been almost a month ago, over a month ago. Anyway, we hosted a chess tournament,
amazing.
Which was great. Super fun. I made some little trophies for it, and had like had 20 players and 10 boards going for, I think we did 6 rounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's expansive.
It was great. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yep.
I'm really struck by Liberty Pole Store being, I don't know the history of that space.
It's old.
I would love for you to tell us about that.
Yeah, for sure.
But like just this idea that it's your space to create, but then it's also not just a retail space. It's also a community space.
100%.
Yeah. I just think that intersection of all of those things is so ideal.
No, I was looking for a wood shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, boy, I think I could maybe afford that for what they were asking. I'm like, boy, that might be an option. And then I like looked at it a little more. I'm like, boy, this isn't just a wood shop. It can't be. There's no way it can just be a wood shop. So I bought it. Very thankful I was able to buy it because I was not rolling in dough.
Right.
But it's worked out wonderfully. So very grateful for that. But like a lot of refurbishing. I spent a couple years after I bought it fixing it up, repainting, scraping the floor, sanding the floor. A lot of the cabinets, they had like original cabinets to the store. I mean, they're cool old shelving. And
how old is the building?
I wish I knew exactly. Yeah. The land that it sits on was purchased by a fella who was the second postmaster in Vernon County.
Oh my gosh.
In 1849.
Cool.
The folks that started the Liberty Pole Store business started in 1845. And then it was two brothers. Mm-hmm. One was postmaster, one was the storekeeper.
Okay.
And one of them went west in 1849 for the gold rush. Mm-hmm. He died on the way back. He sent a letter saying he was coming back and never made it.
Wow.
And then the Jacob Higgins was this fella from, I think he moved from somewhere on the East Coast. I think New York, but I couldn't say for sure.
Gotcha.
In 1849, bought the land that it currently sits on, and I was reading one of the old Vernon County history books says that he built a store at an early day. And it's the same guy for sure because a lot of the stuff that was in the store, a lot of the there's a paper roller, the old thread dispenser, the old scale, a lot of that was donated in the early 90s to the Vernon County Museum.
Okay.
Including his old letter organizer from being postmaster.
Oh, wow.
So that tracked through the store owners all the way until the 1990s.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, how fortunate that those things were able to, in a way, stay in circulation.
Yep. Right.
That's one of the things that I'm struck by. By this region, this community, that there is, maybe reverence is too much of a strong word, but
people do care.
There's an appreciation the history here.
Yeah, the fact that there is a Vernon County history book that you can read about.
Yeah,
you know, the history of the store, and then Mike and Nora Soltau are the folks I bought it from, and they gave me a bunch of stuff. They had a bunch of stuff on display. Articles from the paper different flyers and pamphlets, stuff that had been in like the La Crosse Tribune in like the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
So a lot of cool stuff.
Was it a store? Did it fall into like disuse for a while? Like
it was a general store all the way from 1845 until like 1991.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So
wow.
A long time.
Yeah.
Long time. There was a gentleman that bought it in I think 1923, somewhere right around there. And he ran it until like 76. Jeez. The same guy.
Cool.
It was like 6 days a week, like 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. like all the time. The guy was there.
Yeah.
And lived next door. And then his daughter and son-in-law took over in the mid-70s, ran it until the early 90s. They both passed away within a year or so. And then it was sold a couple times. I think two or three times before the Soltaus bought it.
Okay.
That was in, I think, the early 2000s. And then I bought it. They had about 20 years, and then I bought it from them.
What an incredible legacy.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Like, do you feel that?
Yeah. I mean, it's more just the coolness of having an old building than the pressure of like, oh my, ruin it kind of thing. It's wow, this is really sweet.
Yeah, I mean, you're able to like bring fresh energy into that space that's been there for so long.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then there's like just cool things like the cabinets. A lot of there's, you know, built-in cabinets and like old dry goods bins that have been there, I mean, since at least 1870s.
Wow.
I don't know. Like my best guess is the building was built in the 1850s, early 1850s. I don't know that for certain, but that's my best guess. Yeah. At least 1870s. I found they're like glass case covers from the 1870s that I found in the attic.
Sure.
And it doesn't, they're not dated, but they have the names of the people that owned the store
in
the early, mid 1870s.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So for sure then, and very likely early, I just don't have.
Yeah.
Confirmation of that. And like the door to the basement has Fortney and Peterson written on it, and they owned it. I think they went halvesies on it in like 1874, I think.
Oh, that's so neat. Yep. That's one of my favorite things about like having the opportunity to restore a building is the sleuthing that you can do.
Right.
Like you feel like a little detective.
Oh yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Every time there's a little bit of graffiti or you know, I mean, it's not nearly as cool, but my husband and I are restoring or renovating part of a house that we bought in Viola that was built in like the 1920s.
Yep.
But then there were some changes made to it over the years and we were trying to like puzzle through some things and we took off like a bit of a plumbing chase, like a wall that had been put up to like house some plumbing. And when we took that off, we found the shadow of like an old cast iron sink.
Okay.
So it was like we knew where the original sink had been in the home. And we knew that the kitchen had been changed over time, but we didn't exactly know how.
Right.
And so it was really neat to like see this remnant of the like original 1920s kitchen and just be like, oh, okay, like that's where they had things. Like this is really cool.
And like I, you know, climb around in the attic and you're like, wow, there were like six chimneys in this place. Like that's...
Wait, like, like how?
Yeah, I mean, they had to heat it. They had to heat it. Yeah. And like, I mean... Part of the renovation is like, well, the entire like western side of the building has no insulation.
Sure.
So like they needed six chimneys to kind of warm the place, but So there's still like
there's growing logistics. Pains.
You know, you still need to like do some work to get it.
Yep.
You know, up to code.
Uh huh.
So
yeah,
I'm not trying to get it like completely overhauled, but in terms of like functional, like I'm gonna have to insulate those walls at some point
eventually.
Like I'm burning a lot of firewood, so
buildings that old, in my opinion, should not be pristine.
No, you know, no, like, and that's not the goal.
They've got to have that age. They've got to show that wear and tear.
What I was gonna say about the cabinets is those cabinets, I'm pretty positive they're chestnut cabinets. Oh. And there aren't chestnut trees. I mean, they're doing breeding programs now to build chestnut trees back, but they were all killed by a blight like nearly 100 years ago now. So there's wormy chestnut from the 60s and 70s that was harvested years after it was killed. But in terms of like live harvested chestnut trees, you're not going to find cabinets like that, let alone ones that are 150 years old.
You're you're like the perfect person to have found this place, right?
It's been incredible. Yeah.
I mean, I would look at an old cabinet and appreciate, you know, the construction or, you know, that kind of thing, or maybe like the hinges and the hardware for like what it is. But then you're able to actually look at the wood grain and be like, I recognize this. I know what this is. This is really special.
Well, more in this case, I didn't recognize it. And I was like, what in the world is that?
Oh,
like, yeah.
Right. So you're like going from the negative space of like, I don't recognize this.
Yeah. You're like, huh, boy, I got to kind of.
What could this be?
And then it's a puzzle and I like puzzles. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that's the answer to that puzzle.
That's very cool. Yeah. So just a couple more questions here.
Yeah.
You create work for the Liberty Pole Store.
Yeah.
But I believe you also work on commission or take on special projects.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about like what that balance is like for you.
Yeah. For the most part, honestly, a lot of custom jobs.
Okay.
One thing that means is that it pays.
Yeah.
It also means that it's not replicating the same thing, which I enjoy.
Yeah.
Also means it's harder to make money.
Sure.
I mean,
it's not a regular.
Yep.
Not a regular gig.
Well, no, it can be a regular gig, but you're doing one off every time.
Yeah.
So like, it's not mechanical in that sense.
No,
it's
batching.
Not like, you can do some. Like if I'm gonna make, like half a dozen picture frames, that's one job, you know, and I can make half a dozen. But in terms of, like I just finished up a project. Somebody wanted a butcher block countertop with shelves, and then turned legs on the front. So instead of cabinets, they wanted shelves. So you know, I can turn the legs down one by one. And then build the butcher block, you know, one by one.
Yeah.
And it's, I enjoy it. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I can get good results, but like it sometimes takes a little longer. So,
absolutely. And so I'm hearing you describe things of quite different scale. Like, what's the biggest or the smallest that you have created?
Let's see. Smallest, it can go pretty small. I've made earrings for folks. I've made, and actually, I've got a number of copper earrings in the store. That's somebody was like, actually, my little sister was like, Tony, you gotta have earrings in the store. I was like, all right, I'll make some. So I took some copper wire and hammered them out and bent them around a mandrel and made
cool
earrings that I think are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it gets pretty small. Utensils and little game pieces or whatever. I made a fair number of game boards.
Nice.
And then puzzle boxes. That's a fun one.
Okay.
The R&D in a puzzle box can be a little extreme, but once you got it, it's like, this is pretty cool.
I mean, that's a puzzle in and of itself. Yeah. Like, trying to solve a puzzle box is interesting. So I imagine trying to build one is just absolutely next level. Oh, yeah.
Yep. So I've done a little bit of, it's been a little while since I've like made a new puzzle box design. I should really get on that. But as mentioned, I've been pretty busy in the recent past. So that's maybe on the smaller end. Bigger end, some countertop jobs get pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And tables can get to be pretty sizable. Sure. Like that.
Like dining tables.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. The 4x8, that was a big table. Mm-hmm. Cause it had 18 inch leaves on either end.
Oh wow.
So that was a 4x11 by the time it was done. That's a sizable tabletop. So
absolutely. How long does it take you to make a dining room table?
That one took way too long because I was trying to also make my glue up table to make that table.
Sure.
That one probably took like a year. It was ridiculous.
Okay. Wow.
Because I was trying to fix up the shop and build my glue up table to be a nice long lasting glue up table.
Yeah.
And build the tabletop. So obviously not a year full work.
Yeah.
But like I started and then I stopped and then so that was
that
got pretty old. I don't want to spend a year on a project again. Mm-hmm. I really don't. But most projects, like larger project butcher block jobs, a few weeks.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
It all depends on the job.
Yeah.
And if I'm getting married, that also matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dylan, thank you so much for being here. Is there anything, any last words, anything you want to mention?
Well, thanks for having me, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. If you're going to stop by, feel free. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I'm around.
Awesome.
Besides, for most of the month of March, I'm going to be out.
Getting married.
I will be getting married. So I will be otherwise occupied.
Don't bother this man in the month of March.
Yeah. I mean, you can try, but I probably won't be around.
Sure.
So feel free after that. I mean, I'll be around, you know, most of the month of April. I'll be there and certainly May and for the art tour. So
super.
Hopefully making a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Is Liberty Pole a tour stop?
Yes. Yep. Awesome. It absolutely is.
Awesome.
And my sister will also be in the store.
Wonderful.
For that tour. She does a lot of different stuff too. As I mentioned, she has oxen, also makes paper, handmade paper, does book repair and leather making and all kinds of
I can't cool wait to stuff. Have her on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got to sign up, I think, yet. But
yeah.
Yep.
You can give her a nudge.
I will.
All right. Well, sounds good. Thank you so much, Dylan.
Thank you, Catherine.